There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome in to another Pitt Panther Rants and Other Sports Rants podcast. Happy Tuesday to you guys, as it's, you know, the work day after Labor Day. Although it feels like a Monday. You know, I'm still recovering from COVID. Which, I mean, for me, it was a glorified cold. I mean, I think middle of the week it was bad. But it's like, it just cleared up. Of course, I was medicating and taking my zinc and my freaking vitamin C, all that. I mean, I've been taking that stuff, but you know how that goes. I'm starting to get my sense of taste back. I mean, it wasn't so much I lost because of COVID. It's because when you're so congested, it's like you can't taste anything really. So at least I'm happy that's coming back. That's the worst part I hate about congestion, is when you can't smell hardly, can't hardly breathe, and you can't taste anything. Although, one thing I will say, though, is why can't Chick-fil-A sell their jalapeno salsa in the stores? I mean, they sell the Chick-fil-A sauce. I'll have to check online and see. Let's check the app. Yeah, let's check the app. Because sometimes they do sell the sauce on the app. My kids tried that honey pimento sandwich, and I was going to try it, but I heard the pimento is cold, and yeah, that's just not going to work for me. But then again, I've never had pimento, so maybe that's just how that is, and I'm just not educated on it. Let's take a look here. Let's see, they've got the Chick-fil-A sauce, the Polynesian, the herb ranch, barbecue, and mustard sauce, honey mustard. I actually like the honey mustard. I may have to get some of that. Because I can use it as a rub for my barbecue. But they don't sell the family. Oh, wait, they do sell. No, they don't. Entrees, meals, nothing. I think you can do catering. Let me see. I know one year for my kid's birthday, I just did Chick-fil-A catering. Because it was just so easier to do. Let me see here. Let's select Friday. And let's say birthday maybe. Continue. Okay, you can get trays, packaged meals, salads and wraps, beverages, breakfast. Yeah, I did the nuggets. It was like $35, which was pretty good. They have a mac and cheese tray. Stay here. Let's go back. I'm getting way off course here. The package meals. I mean, you're getting, let's see. If you get a spicy chicken sandwich package meal, 10 meals is $90. You're getting fries. Well, no, you're getting a sandwich, the chips, and a cookie. I guess, I mean, that's all right. I don't know. We'll have breakfast. The chicken minis tray, that's between $20 to $39. How many, let's see, the smallest, you get 20 chicken minis, serves five. 20 chicken minis doesn't serve five people. I don't care. That's four people per chicken minis. That's wrong. Now the 40 serves 10, but I would say if you're gonna have some people that are hungry, that 20 minis they can do jack shit. The spicy biscuits, I can get 10 biscuits for $38.50. I guess if you're doing some sort of like meal prep, that'd be great. I mean, these are some things you can think about. I mean, I wish they had some sort of grilled chicken, but for the breakfast, that'd be cool. But anyways, yeah, I can get sauces, but not the jalapeno salsa, which kind of is a bummer for me because it's a great salsa. You know? But anyways, I'm getting way off balance here, off target. Anyways. Yeah, we're getting way off balance here, off course here. Because I went from talking about the salsa itself to talking about the sauces and talking about catering. That's my short attention span. But back to my original point, I just think that they need to sell the salsa. It's just really good. Okay, so lots happened since my last podcast. So we'll start off with the expansion. ACC did finally offer, well, they finally ended the suspense and added SMU, Cal, and Stanford. SMU is not getting much money. I mean, if you work out the numbers, they're going to get paid the same as if they were in the AAC for the most part. But now they have a seat at the quote-unquote big boy table, which means they're probably going to go nuts and start buying some recruits up because they will become official members in 2024 and, you know, they'll play next season. So I'm sure they're going to, they're going to have fun on the recruiting trail, I'm sure. You know, they've been waiting for this moment for so long, and now they're finally going to get their vengeance. They're definitely going to get their vengeance. I mean, am I crazy about the move? No, I'm not really crazy about it. I thought they should have had it. I thought the ACC should have been more proactive to add more schools. It turns out the ACC was kind of proactive. But the Big 12 is talking to a lot of these schools long before this, you know, was happening. My guess is that the Big 12 saw this was coming. They were more on top of it. And on top of that, if the TV money is going to be similar in the ACC than like it is in the Big 12, I'm sure it makes more sense for those Pac-12 schools to go to the Big 12 because travel isn't going to be as bad. You know, it's nice to see that NC State came to their senses and flipped their vote, because at the end of the day, if anybody who's really learned about conference expansion for the last, I don't know, probably since the days of the Southwest Conference, need to realize that, you know, you're not really united as you think you are. The Southwest Conference was united, and that's why, you know, at one point, it was because Texas and A&M, the bigger schools didn't want the smaller schools to look out for their interests. Then when it all hit the fan, they decided to look out for their interests anyway. And what I mean by that is the bigger schools did. And left a lot of these other smaller schools in the thing. Houston originally should have gotten the Big 12 invite. But they just didn't have enough politicians and lawyers that Baylor had, and that's how that happened. You know, I do believe that Houston at one point did have an option to go to the SEC, but they were told that better deals were coming around for the Southwest schools, and that didn't happen. Another fun fact, Rice had an option to go. Rice at one time could have went to the SEC. All they had to do was spend money to upgrade their facilities, and that was it. And this was like probably maybe late 80s, early 90s maybe. All Rice had to do was just simply spend a few million dollars and upgrade, you know, upgrade their facilities and, you know, make upgrades. They didn't want to do it. And now Rice, you know, basically is in purgatory. But of course, Rice is, you know, was in purgatory long before the Southwest schools broken up. Rice just happened to be a member. You know, they weren't exactly a, you know, powerhouse anymore. Like they were in like the 50s, and, you know, they were just there. You know, that's the thing about a lot of these schools is that, you know, some of them do pound their chests about being in big conferences, but a lot of times it's because they're there. They don't add nothing to the conference. They just happen to be members, which is what Washington State and Oregon State are going to be learning. Or they're at least getting a harsh lesson that, you know, where they were Pac-12 members just because they happened to be members. They didn't really add anything of substance to that conference. They were just members. So it's kind of, I mean, it's like when Pitt played Kentucky in the BBVA Compass Bowl and there was SEC champs from Kentucky fans. And if you're a Pitt fan, you're gonna laugh at that because it's like, okay, you're Kentucky and your football program sucks. You know, you're just a member. And it's the same thing, you know, same thing with Rutgers. Well, Rutgers, you know, they were just they just wanted the New York market, which is kind of baffling to me, but whatever. But all in all, I think that with SMU, they're just here for a good time and not a long time. So I think, you know, I think they're just going to have some fun and buy some recruits and break some more rules. And hey, if it strengthens the ACC, I'm all for it. I mean, Stanford and Cal, it's whatever for me. But if it adds more money, whatever. But at the same time, why not just add Oregon State and Washington State and just be done with it? Just grab them all. But I think with Oregon State and Washington State, they're going to have to make that conference viable somehow. Not sure how they do it. They could just stay at two members and just play each other. That'd be hilarious. Anyways, I'm rambling on about expansion, privilege, and all that other crap that's going around. But, yeah, overall, I'm not too crazy about the expansion, but I know why they did it. It is what it is. They have to backfill because there's a good chance Clemson and Florida State are going to leave. Which we will get into Coastal Chaos here in a minute. Because we got to talk about that. Because we did have some Coastal Chaos, but let's get the Pitt by chance. Because we need to talk about that. Pitt opened their season against Wofford, against the Fighting Sean Watsons. Pitt came out a 45-7 winner. There were some complaints about Pitt not opening up their offense. I saw it on Twitter, actually. I'm not sure if they were complaining, but they were just saying, I guess they're right. I mean, their gripe was they see other teams running up scores and whatnot. I think Pat Narduzzi just wanted to win the game and just be, you know, that's just how Pat is. He just wants to win the game and be done. But one thing I was looking for was how the passing game looked. I know in the first drive, it didn't look good. Then Pitt settled down. And, you know, Philly Jerkovic, he had a command of the offense. And it looked like he was on the same page with his receivers. In fact, he connected with so many receivers that, I mean, they're him and Mr. Christian Ballou. I mean, there was 12, 13 guys that at least had a catch in this game. So you can't go wrong there. The running game was the running game. Actually, Daniel Carter was a leading rusher, but I mean, he's a fullback, but. You know, defense, you know, play its ass off like it always does. And You know, there wasn't really much else to talk about. I mean, it's Wofford. They got Cincinnati coming up next week. That should be a tough game. You know, that won't be an easy one. It won't be. I mean, it's Cincinnati. I mean, they won their game as well. But overall, Pitt, you know, was Pitt. And let's see. Pitt did have a fumble recovery on defense, but overall, the defense, for the most part, didn't really have to break a sweat much, which is probably a good thing. Other than that, I just, you know, there's really not much else to go on. The only thing, I mean, the things I like from Philly, Mr. Big Philly himself is, you know, he's a lot more mobile than previous quarterback Keaton Slovis, who I watched his BYU game on Saturday, and other than that first drive, once Sam Houston State dialed up the pressure, it looked like I was watching Pitt's offense from last year. It was the same old with Keaton, and Sam Houston State just. I mean, I think this is their first year in Division 1A. I think it's either their first or second year, one of the two. But this is, I mean, they're a relatively new FBS team, and they were dialing up the pressure on Keaton. I mean, I don't know. Sam Houston State could easily be like the South Florida, you know, when they were coming into FBS, when they were just a real pain in the ass. When they had Markell Blackwell and they beat us at Hines. Kind of felt like that. But, I mean, Phil knew where to go. If he had to scramble, he knew what receiver to find. And the receivers knew where they had to go, to keep the play going. You know, that's pretty much what I was looking for, is how the passing game was going to be. And I think we're going to be, you know, passing game-wise, I think we're going to be just fine. I think maybe last year we just didn't have a good quarterback play, and this year we do. I think it looks a lot better. I think running game will be fine. But again, at the same time, it's Wofford. But it's, I mean, there's no cause for concern. But, you know, next week provides that test, you know, for them. Now, as we look at the rest of the ACC, let's see, Wake Forest beat Elon. That was on Thursday. NC State beat UConn 24-14. I thought this game would be a little bit, well, I give UConn credit. They really gave NC State a game, given that NC State's breaking in, you know, with Brandon Armstrong being reunited with his coordinator when he lit it up at UVA. Friday night, we saw Miami beat Miami of Ohio 30-3. Louisville, the Jeff Brohm era kicks off. They beat Georgia Tech 39-34. Georgia Tech was up 28-13 at one point, and they did Georgia Tech things. And that's that. And let's see, on Saturday, Virginia lost to Tennessee 49-13. It's going to be probably a long season for UVA. North Carolina beat South Carolina 31-17. Spencer Rattler had a nice game. That's really about it. I just couldn't get in the end zone. You know, Pitt plays North Carolina in a few weeks. That's going to be a real, I mean, that may be another shootout. Well, I just hope Pitt scores more points this time. Northern Illinois beat Boston College 27-24 in overtime. I don't know, the Jeff Hathley era is coming to an end, and really it's just hot garbage. All right. Then Syracuse beat Colgate 65-0. Virginia Tech beats Old Dominion 36-17. Florida State hammered out LSU 45-24. And Clemson falls to Duke 20-7. Now, one thing to talk about this game is that I give FSU some credit. They put their money where their mouth is. Because I thought LSU was going to win this game because, you know, they woke up last year before it's too late. It was kind of too late for them by that time. You know, Florida State would eventually win. And I felt it was going to be the same thing, but I'm not sure if this Brian Kelly type of offense is going to work. I mean, they'll score points, but I mean they had opportunities to punch it in, and one receiver dropped a wide open pass, I think, if I remember correctly. Just a lot, but Keon Coleman of Florida State had 9 catches, 122 yards, 3 touchdowns. Now, one thing I noticed is about Keon is he was a transfer from Michigan State. And if there's one thing I can say about the Jordan Addison transfer to USC is his transfer didn't sting as much because he was in the Pac-12 and, you know, Pac-12 really doesn't get much. You don't really see a lot of Pac-12 games on TV. I mean, they're on TV. You just don't notice them. Like they're not noticeable. People don't really notice Pac-12 games. The Pac-12 games are on. I mean, they're on the television, but you don't. They're not really made noticeable. Whereas Keon Coleman is on national TV. Playing Sunday night, and he's lighting it up. And I'm sure Michigan State fans are watching, you know, for them having them watch that, I'm sure it probably stings. Whereas in Pitt's case, it didn't sting because we really didn't have to watch Jordan Addison at all. He wasn't plastered in front of our television screens. Like, here, Jordan Addison, US. I mean, because it was all about Caleb Williams, it wasn't about Addison. You know, Caleb Williams was the lead singer. Jordan was probably the drummer or the bassist or the keyboardist. That's one thing I can say that's, you know, one thing that's, you know, I can say about Jordan's transfer that you know, didn't hurt as much as we thought it would. I mean, of course, he was a first-round pick. Or was he a first-round? Let me double-check. Yeah, he was a 23rd overall pick. And, of course, he gets the USC tag applied to him because it was the last school. Although Pitt made him, but whatever. So, Duke beat Clemson. I mean, I will admit, I was harsh on Duke. I wasn't buying them. I just thought there wasn't enough from last year to show that they were, like, you know, one of the top teams in the ACC this year. And I may still be right, but, you know, people are blaming Dabo Swinney for not using the transfer portal and stuff. And I get that. But at the same time, if you look at Clemson's resume the last several years, the national titles, and of course the championship appearances and the national titles, their program should be able to should be able to attract top talent without having to go to the portal every year. But, you know, they haven't. I think the issue with Clemson is they have not really found an offense since Trevor Lawrence left. Ever since he left, that offense has kind of went to hell. And they just haven't really found anybody to pick up the slack. And, you know, this game, it seemed like they didn't punt at all in the second half. They were moving a ball, but it seemed like they were beating themselves. And they may still be a dangerous team. We haven't, you know, it's still the first game. But at the same time, the ACC Coastal Chaos is still around. And, you know, I put out a tweet last year where I warned people about this. Because the ACC Atlantic members were all pounding their chests about being one conference and no divisions. And, of course, you had all these people. They were Atlantic, you know, they were fans of Atlantic member teams pounding their chest about this, that, you know, this is good because the coastal teams don't deserve to play for the ACC title and blah, blah, blah. I mean, these are fans of teams that are Atlantic that don't really add anything. They just happen to pound their chest because, well, they play in the same division as Clemson. And I thought you got to be careful what you wish for, because whatever madness that was in the coastal was going to be now brought into this one big division now. And you just seen it, you know, last night with Duke and Clemson. You know, you can get rid of the coastal division, but you can't take the coastal out of the ACC. But anyways, as far as the rest of the top 25 goes, there really wasn't much. I mean, the Pac-12 supposedly was undefeated over the weekend, and people were saying how horrible this is. You know, I mean, the presidents should be ashamed of themselves and blah, blah, blah. I mean, they didn't have to leave the Pac-12, those teams. They all could have stayed. Oregon and Washington could have stayed. They could have stayed and worked this all out, but they wanted to go. I mean, that's just how that is. You know, it just, you know, it's just at the end of the day, you're losing TV, you're losing money, and that's what this was. You know. Without, you know, USC and UCLA, you know, the Pac-12 should have did something. They should have tried to add teams, tried to get what they can to get that money up. But they thought they were worth more than just that. And, you know, it was all said and done right when they were trying to get, you know, keep the conference together. I mean, two more teams left for the Big Ten, and that was it. But, I mean, if they really wanted to stay and make it work, they could have, but they didn't. Oh, well, anyway. Not much else happened. I mean, I could talk about Penn State, West Virginia, but we all knew how that game was going to go. And, of course, James Franklin made sure they covered. So, you know, that goes. He's always going to cover no matter what. Anyways, I'm done here, guys. Oh, wait a minute. I'm not done yet. I forgot about Colorado and TCU. I mean, Coach Prime made his debut. It was, I'll keep it brief before I get off this podcast. He had a hell of a debut. He put his money where his mouth was. But it's a long season. You know, let's hope he can, you know, if he can get them at least to a winning record, I think that he's, you know, he's backed up his talk. But it's a long season. Anyways, held up hit. Bye.